Welcome to Real Flicks Reviews, like a book club for people hate reading. This month we're doing grab bags, so I picked Abbott and Costello's Hold That Ghost. We bring you movie news. This week we have Jonathan Charney, James Stevens, and Ryan Preston. Hold That Ghost, 1941, is about two bumbling service station attendants who are left as the sole beneficiaries in a gangster's will. Their trip to acclaim the fortune is sidetracked when they are stranded in a haunted house along with several other strangers. And with that being, description being said, I want to say a few things is Abbott and Costello are considered one of the greatest comedy duos in history. Bud Abbott is considered literally the greatest straight man ever.
Yeah. Well, the closest thing we have to these days of something like that where you have a comedy duo, we don't really have it anymore. There's no real, like, real straight men. I mean, the closest thing we've had in the past 15, 20 years is Jackie Chan and Owen Wilson. I mean, come on, really? That's who we got?
That's a good point. One of the issue, like James said, is the straight man, it's cracking a lot more jokes, at least more than Bud Abbott ever did. Lou Costello was always the foil for everything. He's the guy who sees everything. And one of the bits in this movie is he's alone in a room, hangs up a coat hook, and then everything turns to gambling equipment. You know?
I've never seen anybody that scared of a casino before, though.
Yeah, really.
Never met a gambling addict. So. You know, it was one of the things that Bud Abbott came in, didn't see anything. And Bud Abbott's job was pretty much to continue the story. That's kind of the way I took it.
You also got I want to actually mention that we do also have another comedy duo that are very successful. And Teller does kind of play kind of a straight guy. I mean, but when you're not talking, it's kind of easy. And you got Penn. But nothing to the point of Bud Abbott's straight guy.
Oh no! And this is
it's a lost art, the straight man, the way they used to play it. At least as far as the comedy duo is concerned. I know both of you are familiar with the Smothers Brothers, and that's a comedy duo that played the straight guy, funny guy on a stage. Yeah. You know, so you know, one guy's cracking wise, the other guy's pretending not to get the jokes. I mean, there's gags on both sides. And there's an art to being able to say ridiculous shit while keeping a straight face.
Oh, you know? And that's probably something because at least in the 40s, they were closer to vaudeville than we are now. So a lot of that performing art is gone.
You're still getting a lot of the
Pratfalls?
Falls, a lot of the cuts to the music breaks. It's this real variety act kind of thing.
Yeah. But I'm more of a Marx Brothers fan. I do enjoy Abbott and Costello and the Three Stooges, which are some of the other ones that are really big from this time era. You can't really take those types of comedy acts and compare them to Abbott and Costello, though, because it's a different style. It's a different delivery.
Yeah, and I would say it's not completely different, but almost, where you have the Marx Brothers and everything is slapstick, everything is funny. The Three
what
Stooges.
What are you talking about? Marx Brothers was the perfect straight guy. I meant Harpo Marx is the perfect straight guy.
He didn't talk. You know, where you had the Three Stooges where they're all, you know, doing pratfalls and beating the crap out of each other. I really do think that Abbott and Costello are a completely different beast, at least especially for them.
I mean, yeah.
Yeah, they obviously have elements of slapstick, you know what I mean? There's some pratfalls and things like that that Lou's, you know, really good at doing.
But the
relationship is incredibly abusive.
Yeah.
For one.
I mean, I'm thinking I'm not slapping John enough off of the show.
I know, that's kind of what this movie makes you think, right? And you know what I realized, James, and I've been doing this wrong the entire time. You're supposed to check if a gun's loaded or not by putting it to your temple and pulling the trigger a couple of.
Yeah, I mean that's what I was thinking too.
And I
also got to mention, just because John was about to get on another point, is that when I think somebody pulls a knife on me, slapping them in the face is not my first response.
Seriously. I first saw this movie as a kid, and one of the reasons I was endeared to it, honestly, because it scared the crap out of me. It's 6 years old. Which
we have far different taste in horror movies at 6 years old.
Yeah, I mean, Yeah, no, right?
But I mean, he watches Abbott and Costello, I watch Night of the Living Dead.
Right?
Yeah, really.
You could see what movies my parents let me watch as a kid. Even Transformers was pushing it when they said the word shit.
Instead of your dad's in the movie.
I love this movie. There is nothing about this movie I don't love. And it's obviously if you've been watching a show at all, I love older movies.
He's a black and white guy.
I love black and white. And black and white, especially in this movie, I think really lends to the story. You've got a broken down old house slash in the middle of nowhere, and strange things happen in. And Lou Costello, honestly, he's the best part of this movie. Just like the dancing scene.
I was actually kind of impressed by his skills.
For a big guy, he could move.
He's a graceful big guy. I mean, it's something that we're lucky enough to see every, 15, 20 years.
Drew Carey.
I don't know if I'd consider Drew Carey.
He's just, the John Belushi.
Yeah, but I'm saying I mentioned Drew Carey because he is actually a really good dancer as well. I mean, he's light on his feet, surprisingly.
And
he's lost a lot of weight, though.
One of the other thing that really
that mic.
One of the thing that kind of stood out to me is Shemp Howard is in this movie.
Yes,
one of the Three Stooges, or Four Stooges, or Five Stooges. So that was one as a kid. I remember watching it, going, "Whoa!" It still kind of blows my mind because he wasn't in a whole lot of things that I can remember. Besides,
other than Three Stooges,
yeah, and I think Mo did maybe a serious role here or there, but none of the Three Stooges ever really branched out.
Not to the best of my knowledge. Like James, I was much more of a Marx Brothers fan. I leaned more towards them just because they were always the smartest guys in the room. You know what I mean?
Oh yeah,
and the funnest guys in the room,
at least
for sure.
At least the most entertaining guys in the room.
But, he had some great lines. I'm talking about Lou Costello. Like one of my favorite ones is, we had a runaway marriage. Yeah, she bought the license. I ran away. But it was, he had a few really smart, witty lines. They still kind of fit his character that he was trying to play, kind of a idiot savant type thing. Not really that.
I don't think Lou Costello.
That's the thing is, knowing what we know today about mental illness, you know what I mean. He's clearly autistic, and thus colors it in this really sort of sadistic light when you look at how Bud treats him.
Yeah. Right? Let's just say we're talking about lines. Here's one that I always thought was amusing. Somebody blew up my candle. That was the wind. Since when does the wind eat garlic?
I mean, that's
it's subtle.
These movies are really, really formulaic, and the Abbott and Costello started to go a little bit off the rails, and you can't blame them because, studios like Universal will check this out, just year after year, give them another one.
And I think,
Abbott and Costello, The Adventures of Such and Such, or Meet So and So,
And I think they did for a while.
I mean, they probably did 100 movies. I mean, I think this one's a little one of their more convoluted ones. It wasn't something as simple as Meets the Mummy,
Or The Invisible Man.
It had an interesting element because it was the mafia, and I'd never seen him, with the mafia before. I don't claim to be an aficionado.
Well, that's one of the reasons I like them. Is this one's a tad bit more complicated? It's not, normally I describe them as kind of Tom and Jerry esque in their movies. Kind of here's the beginning, here's the ending. It's just kind of very linear. This one
I totally remember. This one.
No, this movie to me is one of their best ones just because it's different. It's not typical. I think to me personally, I think it's an atypical movie for them.
It definitely goes into the, like I don't think they had done like the murder mystery house kind of.
I'm actually kind of glad they didn't do the Clue type thing.
I mean, it had shades of Clue, But comedy ensues when you have Bud Abbott and Lou Costello, though.
Yeah, but those are some of the worst hitmen I've ever seen, though.
I mean, dude, why would you even have the guy meet him there if you plan to kill him outside? I don't want to go into the plot holes.
Yeah, I mean, you can't hit somebody throwing a knife at them from, 3 feet.
I was going to say, you probably don't want to go into...
stab him at that distance.
I was going to say, don't throw your knife.
It's also probably...
There's an idea.
probably a good thing you don't go in the plot holes in this movie, because I'm pretty sure there's more holes than actual plot in this movie.
But we were talking about
Lives. Yeah, for sure. But I mean, obviously they don't, they're counting on the people sort of living like a fly's memory of joke to joke.
Oh yeah. You know? It's not like this is supposed to be Citizen Kane or 1984 or one of those movies.
They'll basically just take old Universal stories, because they were the same studio, and repurpose the monster for their purposes, you know.
Sorry.
Like, you know, obviously meets the mummy, meets the
Frankenstein
all that stuff.
I was going to say, there was one more line that I thought was just fantastic. It's when Moose shows up in his car. He says, I want to park for a little bit, gives it over to Lou Costello, and he backs it up. You should take that guy's driver's license. Oh, we will, once he gets one. I just thought that was fantastic of a line.
Oh, yeah. There's so many amazing lines in this movie. And Ryan's definitely right that, you know, the plot basically carries you from one joke to another.
Yeah, but I still got to say, I mean, there was not thousands of tens in that Moose's head. I'm sorry. And then dropped some in the fire. That was just...
But in 1941, that did seem like $1 million. Nowadays, that's, I don't know, maybe a good down payment for a car.
Yeah, but she said millions, trillions. And, I mean, if you're talking millions and trillions, it should be millions and trillions, not $5,000 in a different time. It's just throwing that out there.
It's 1941. They probably couldn't afford to, you know, make all the fake bills. Well, I
mean,
they're just
breaking out of the Depression, trying to get out of it. You know, I mean, I can see that. But, you know, just keep your tin of bacon fat.
Jeez.
Anyways. You know, but I think for this type of comedy at the era that I was in, I think it was great. I don't think it was excellent out there, you know, amazing. But like I mentioned before, is I'm more of a Marx Brothers fan. I like to have that where you got the characters playing off one another and the jokes are flying so fast that you have to watch the movie at least 10 times to think that you caught it.
And I would say, unlike Abbott and Costello and what Ryan said earlier, is Marx Brothers really were the smartest people in the room.
Yeah.
They were at least a couple of minutes ahead of the story.
Yeah, and what John likes to say is they screwed with everybody.
Oh, constantly.
The reason I was a Warner Brothers fan instead of Disney.
Yeah.
But
I think this one really highlights the skills of Abbott and Costello to play off each other. And because they were mostly playing off of each other, they really weren't playing with the extras of the cast.
I'd say
jokes and interactions weren't,
and with the environment.
Yeah,
they were playing off themselves and the environment more than anybody else. And all the other characters, from the doctors to the doctor to the two women, they're so ancillary. They're almost not important to the story.
Yeah. They're really
not important. They kind of just pop in to just sort of further the plot just a couple of minutes, and then more shit with Bud and Lou.
Yeah, like the water thing. That was really something that the cast was driving. Yeah. They weren't so much behind it.
I do have to ask a question. What's up with like the 1941 and having to have like music? Because even the Marx Brothers have like two, you know, like musical spots. Don't get me wrong. I actually like the Andrews Sisters, but I think it's kind of random.
The musical spots were something that was expected at that time. Actors at this time, and you can see that all the way up until... Ryan can correct me, or some idiot out there can correct me. The 60s were really when that started petering off, where an actor had to be able to sing and dance because that was what entertainment was transferring from.
That's true. Like the term, he's a song and dance man.
Yes.
Right. And the traditional sort of triple threats you used to get back in the day, you know, you didn't have... You know, you usually had like one person that was good at one or the other, but there was always kind of a song and dance number in there somewhere. You know, you got an hour and 25 minutes, you know, especially with things like this, you gotta fill some of that time.
Yeah, sure, and I was actually trying to see the black gentleman that was singing with the guy in the beginning. I was trying to find his name. He was another guy that was...
Wait, the singing or the guy playing the shadow?
The guy playing the shadow.
He sung too.
He sung a little bit. He sung a little bit towards the end, I think, of the first act.
Yeah, I've seen him in something else, and I can't remember what it was. But he was also another actor of the time. But what, did you recognize him, Ryan?
No. Okay. Actually, I thought he looked like the guy from The Wire, but that's beside the point.
I think he's dead.
I got to say...
Yeah, I think so, too.
Got to say, the one thing I like about this movie is it's not PC. You would never be able to make this movie on any sort of level because how on PC it is. And to me, that's one of the reasons I love it the most, because it's such an honest movie, especially for the time. It's a very honest movie.
Well, that's the thing, is it's really a product of its time.
Oh,
it's
yeah.
It's not PC in today's standards, but I don't think anybody watches a movie or a film or a TV from back then with today's standards. Or if you do, you're kind of just poking fun at it, like I was doing with the black guy playing the Shadow.
Yeah.
I mean, it's obviously recent.
Yeah.
Can't do that shit.
Yeah, but they didn't
know any. They thought that was like, well, yeah, the dark guy will think it's okay, whatever.
the dark guy.
Folks,
He'll take your money.
Yeah, I mean, you kind of look back on it as like, all right, well, this is what it is. But I was going to say, because you said you found this movie when you were a kid. These movies are really perfect to find at like 8 or 9 years old.
Oh, yeah.
Because it does feel like you're watching something a little more adult, a little more subversive than you probably should be. But it's really low ball, like just sort of the easy setup joke, good one liners, things like that. Interesting stories like, oh, meets the mummy or something there. I mean, they did a Jack and the Beanstalk, for crying out loud.
And I would also say this is a movie that's one of the few movies, or at least like compared to modern movies, you can actually sit down with your son or daughter and actually enjoy it. There's simple storytelling. It's not overly violent, not bad language. It's basic comedy.
Right.
And that's one of the things I think that I kind of measure things these days is the family time. I mean, I'm a big fan of violent movies. Hell, I'm a Quentin Tarantino fan. But it's always nice to tell somebody, they say, hey, what's a gold movie that I could sit down with my kid? This is perfect. Because as a kid, you'll laugh your ass off.
And there's a bunch of them, if you can kind of get around some of the parlance of the times, of some of the speech and turns of phrases and things like that. I mean, yeah, they're fun movies.
Yeah.
Especially, obviously none of us were from 1941. So we all sort of just found these movies randomly.
Maybe the old guy.
I mean, I was a big Abbott and Costello fan when I was a kid.
So here's a question, Ryan. What do you give this movie?
Okay, it's a 3. It would be a 2.5, but it gets a full.
A what?
You kind of stopped there. Had some connectivity issues. Could you repeat your point?
Yeah, I said it's a 3 and it's a 2.5 on its own, but a full half point higher because of the Andrews sisters.
James,
he has a crush. They're dead. Anyways,
And they're kind of homely, but they sing good.
But on the positive side, if they come back alive, he'll be the first one to know.
So but I take this movie as like a product of the times, and I think for coming out of that era, I think most Abbott and Costello's, I would say for me, would be a 3. But this one being the way that it is, I got to give it a 4 just because I look at it as a product of the times. And the comedy of that era is something that I think is really reflected in this film.
I actually agree. Everything James says, I actually give it a 5 out of 5 because to me there's also the nostalgia factor.
And he likes the Andrews sisters too.
The middle one was cute. The other two, not
you
so
like
much.
The short ones just because you're tall.
Which one's the short one?
All of them.
So for me, there's this nostalgia factor in it. Because as a kid, I love this movie. As an adult, I still love this movie. There's nothing wrong. It's just a good fun, and it's a short movie. So yeah, definitely a 5 out of 5. And I have an idea for a new feature, so I figured we'd give it a shot right now, where we have a few minutes. Is what movie would be improved by being absolutely hammered while you watch it? And I give up Vin Diesel's Babylon AD is the first one that would probably be better if you were drunk. Ryan?
When you said Vin Diesel, XXX came to mind. Yeah, I wish I was drunk when I saw that movie.
I'm not quite sure if being drunk would improve the movie or not, though. Being stoned, oh. Yes. Being drunk, I don't think so.
Well, I think any movie would be improved if you were drunk.
James?
Is that your answer?
Yes.
Okay. Das Boot.
So drink every time you hear somebody say something in German?
Yep. Yeah. That's my answer.
You wouldn't make it for the first 10 minutes.
It doesn't bother me. I'll wake up and I'll see credits.
If you wake up at all.
Well, there's my answer.
You start drinking. Next thing you see, St. Peter. It's not going to go so well. So, ladies and gentlemen, I want you to know we do have a Facebook page. Do you love us, hate us? As long as you're creative, we'll read you on air. No, you suck. Or we hate you. Or the fat guy's an asshole. I mean, come on. Be original. He's making fun of Nazis again.
That guy is an asshole, though.
Well, yes, he is.
Just call me Arnie.
Oh, jeez. No, that's inside. So, hey. And so, we got some
movements. I totally threw John.
Yes, you did. You totally,
side of a cliff.
You totally screwed my momentum, you fat asshole.
I'm waiting for you to start giving us movie news.
Oh, shit.
Does it have anything to do with superheroes?
I actually got a couple of one. Justin, oh, what the hell his name is? Joseph Gordon-Levitt.
Wow, that's exit so cool. Justin.
He exits the Sandman movie, officially. Which is, he was one of the driving force behind getting this comic book live-action movie made. I actually don't know anything about the source material.
Yeah, I don't either. I was kind of thinking, that kind of looks like one of the guys from, what's it called? Naruto. Is that who he is?
So I was actually surprised, because for a long time, he was the only name associated with the movie you actually heard.
Wow, that's pretty bad.
I don't know anything about this one.
Yeah, I don't know anything about this one either. I'm wondering, is this like... I don't even know. I mean, is it dead because he's leaving? If he's their starring man.
I don't know. Yeah, way to go, John. Bring up something we have no frame of reference for.
Well, I thought that's why it's news, because it's new to us. Jeez.
And it's
Ryan
It's Joseph Gordon-Levitt, and he was, you know, he's a guy, I think his career's...
Rock.
His career is really on the uptick lately, so that was why I was surprised he actually stepped out of it.
I mean, you know, to me, he had me at Angels in the Outfield, but, you know.
Whatever.
Justice League adds J.K. Simmons as Commissioner Gordon. It's Jordan. So he's going to be in the movie.
What are you talking about?
Wow, that's interesting. Because I thought he made a great J.J. Jameson.
That's what I was thinking, too. Like, they were actually petitioning him to come back for the new Spider-Mans.
I mean, because he played such a great J.J. Jameson.
Yeah.
But I don't know about Jim Gordon, though. That's a whole different ballgame. I mean, not to say he can't do it. The guy's a great character actor.
But you need somebody who acts like a jerk but looks friendly. Like, every movie I've seen him in, you just think, that guy's an asshole.
No,
I mean, Bryan Cranston did the voice for it in Batman Year One, the animated feature. And ever since then, I'd love to see him play Jim Gordon.
Huh. And in the I'm okay with this pile, Fox nixes the Gambit movie release date.
Wait, what? They're
release it?
They either canceled or removed the release date from the Gambit movie.
Huh.
I'm actually okay with this.
Want them rushing it? I mean,
I don't want them rushing it, because if they're going to do a Gambit movie, they've got to do it right and don't let it be like X-Men Wolverine.
Hold on.
I swear, man, when these friggin' origin stories first started coming out, I always hoped they would do something with Gambit. At this point, I don't think I give a shit anymore.
Yeah.
Like, I don't care if it sucks anymore. I'm so resolved to just like, oh, whatever.
You know, I kind of am in the same boat as Ryan, but there is one thing that I would like to see the Gambit movie do, and I just showed up on their page just to make sure that they didn't have a plot, but I would like to see them do something with the thieves and the assassins.
That's actually the first thing I thought of when I heard it, because if you ever watched
Said thieves the way it's supposed to be. Shut up.
If you don't know what he's talking about, it's really highlighted in a couple of episodes of the 90s cartoon,
yeah,
which really brings up to to me when I first saw it, and even now when I watch it, is it's a lot of rich area for a decent movie. Yeah. And it's not a fucking origin story, which I'm not tired of, but at this point, there's only so many Superman, Batman, and Spider-Man origin stories I can watch without wanting to throw something through a window.
Yeah, I mean, you get Hollywood, you've beaten the shit out of our childhood. Like, really.
I mean, yeah, they really threw it all at us at once. And it was kind of cool, like, every few years, you'd hear some tale of something from your past, but... Yeah, they're like oh, you like that? It's like saying that you like this flavor of ice cream, so somebody made you eat, you know, 10 gallons of it.
Yeah.
Because there's at least two or three Spider-Man origin stories. There's a handful of Batman origin stories.
There's a shit ton of Hulk.
there's like at least three or four with Hulk.
Not to mention the Batman-y, too.
And you have one of the crappiest origin stories known to man, being X-Men Origins Wolverine. At this point, I actually think they just need to stop. One of the better origin stories happened lately, I think, would be in the Marvel world, would be the Avengers origin stories.
Yeah, I would say Ant-Man was pretty good.
But I would also say Deadpool. I'd also say that's because they haven't done them before. I don't want another Hulk. Ever.
Just wait till they do the Wasp.
I mean, unless they do like Planet Hulk, I'm okay with, because that's a completely different story.
Planet Hulk, that'd be ridiculous.
Oh yeah, but I'd be okay with it because it's not another origin story. I doubt it would do well.
Yeah.
I want a Black Panther origin story because he's one of my favorite characters.
Well, see, those you almost owe it to your audience to do an origin story. But at this point, you know, freaking 50 years of people making Batman, we definitely don't need that origin story anymore. We definitely don't need to see that Clark Kent came from freaking Krypton anymore.
Because you have them with at least with Batman, you've got what, maybe three different actors telling variations of the same character.
Right, but the problem is you have these directors and these new filmmakers or these new takes where they want to sort of establish their point of view on it, and the way to do that is to do the origin story a little different than the last guy, you know?
I totally agree, and I'm trying to think of what origin story I think are different, and the latest Superman has a little bit of a different twist on it, because I think it goes a little bit more into Krypton we ever had before. Christopher Nolan's Batman was a tad bit different, but that's just because of the universe it was placed in, not the story itself, if that makes sense. I'm totally done with them. Is there any origin stories any of you guys would want to see?
I mean, obviously you got to do, you know, stuff like Doctor Strange as origin stories, and I'm really looking forward to that.
I'll give you that.
But no. And at this point, I think we can just kind of start doing the interstitial style, you know, old school comic book stories. I mean, just, you know, throw like these one-offs out there, like the continuing adventures of whatever the hell.
Now, do you want each one to be contained stories or each one to be canon in like a larger arc? Kind of what Marvel's doing with the Avengers.
I mean, kind of, but at the same time, you can have just like kind of like what Disney's about to start doing with Star Wars. You're just gonna have like a Boba Fett movie and thing. And just like, here's just a thing that has to do with the Flash or you know with whoever.
Yeah,
I would actually be okay.
Definitely doesn't need to be, you know, the Flash origin story again, just because you started a movie franchise now.
I would be okay with not having a Flash origin story because there's two, count them, two television shows, and both have origin stories. You can skip that. One was in the 80s and one is recent. So I'm okay with that.
Yeah, I don't think there's really anybody that I need to see an origin story of now. I mean, like Ryan, Doctor Strange was one of my favorite guys. That one's coming out. The other ones, you've done so many. It's ridiculous. Let's not even talk about Blade either.
Oh, and you know, we're kind of beating a dead horse, but I actually don't want
any... Hollywood's beating a dead horse. It's dead. Cook it.
Poor Mr. Ed. Bulber must be very upset right now. Right. I don't even want a separate Boba Fett story I'd be okay with. I don't want a Boba Fett origin story because they already kind of given it.
That much.
I don't want even a Han Solo origin story. He's one of my favorite characters, honestly.
Yeah, you just kind of want to see him, you know, like bomb around space for a couple of hours.
Yeah, have another story before he met Leia, you know, or just something.
Even, between Empire and Jedi, whatever he was doing off in his free time.
Yes, exactly.
The only one.
You know, same thing with Boba Fett. You know, a couple of missions that he took.
Shut up.
One that stood out.
Finally.
Okay, so the only one out of the Star Wars universe I would ever be interested in is Yoda.
Yeah,
I don't. For sure. You know, I'll be honest.
400 years old. I mean, he's got to reach at the tail end of the Old Republic.
Yeah, as far as an origin story, I'd love to see that Old Republic.
You know, to be honest, I don't know if I'd like Yoda, because one of the reasons I like that character is he's so mysterious. I think if you start explaining things more, he'll ruin to me some of the luster.
All right, I could see that. Anyways, yeah.
Well, look, I think they're gonna start doing that anyway. But it's sad that they can literally take pieces of our childhood like that and just kind of sell it back to us and knowing that we're going to fucking pay for it. Yeah.
But I guarantee there's one piece of, or two pieces of our childhood they'll never remake. One being Howard the Duck, thankfully. Two being Buckaroo Banzai. and three, hopefully Back to the Future. I guarantee there'll never be any more of those three.
I wouldn't be so sure on something like that.
With Back to the Future, the director basically said he's going to perpetually stop that from ever happening again. Not what he's going to die eventually.
Anyways,
so ladies and gentlemen, next week is James's pick, and well, batter up.
Gotta say, for my last pick, we kind of already picked the movie that I'm going to be choosing. We're going to go with the 1992, the beginning of the Candyman saga.
Ooh.
And for a TV show, I'm going to throw out this one. It's premiering tomorrow. It is kind of like a biblical type thing, but it's of Kings and Prophets.
I haven't heard about this one.
This one's being premiered tomorrow. So,
So Candy, okay. Interesting. It glitched on me.
Uh-huh. Candy Ann. That's what John's going to be watching.
It's a horror movie of Raggedy Ann. It's creepy, man.
Well, I didn't pick like the ginger ones.
Not the gumdrop buttons. Ladies and gentlemen, I gave Hold That Ghost a 5 out of 5. James gave it a 4 to 5. Ryan gave it a 3 out of 5. Next week, we're doing Candyman 1992, the starting of the franchise. And we're doing...
of Kings and Prophets.
For the television show, as always, see you next week.
Speaking of ginger snaps. ¶¶